Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. I'm Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we've got a special treat for you today because we are being joined on mic by our cherished and always dependable, excellent producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson, to give you a little taste of a new podcast that Seth himself is a host of.
Hello, everyone. It's excellent to see you all here on this side of the microphone. And it's a show I do called Record Store Society. And Robert and Joe have been very kind enough to want to do a nice little crossover episode where we break down some music videos in both these shows. So I'm grateful and I'm happy to be here. It's going to be fun.
Now, before we get going here, first of all, we said it's a new podcast, but you've been out for a little bit, so you have a number of episodes under the belt, so that's important to drive home. So if anybody goes to the feed, they're not just going to find one or two episodes to choose from. There's going to be a wider selection. Can you go ahead and tell everyone out there how they can find Record Store Society?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, first of all, the premise of the show is very straightforward. It's basically just a talk show, but amongst music nerds. Like, the show, quote-unquote, takes place inside a record store where myself and my co-host, Tara Davies, we work at the record store. And then, quote-unquote, customers come into the store and we talk about music. So it's a glorified talk show, but we talk about music and we're very nerdy about it. We do a lot of top five countdown lists. We do a lot of like album of the month club. Let's really deep dive into this album. We'll play certain games where like we'll play a record backwards. And you have to identify it, you know, just like the kind of goofy stuff you would do if you were a clerk in a record store killing time by just talking to your customers and, you know, being real nerdy specifically about music. It's an iHeart radio podcast on the same network as you guys. And if you just go to any of the podcast catchers, such as Spotify, iHeart, Stitcher, all those, Apple, just type in Record Store Society. You'll find it right away.
Now, Seth, I should have asked you this before. Does this come from personal experience? Did you ever actually work in a record store?
I did, but I have to say it was a very uncool way of having that job. When I was in my very early college years, and actually, oh, and late high school years, late high school, early college, I worked in the music department of a Best Buy.
Ooh.
So I will say, in all fairness to myself, It was an enormous music section because this was in Portland, Oregon. And for some reason, I would say half of our store was just our CD department. And I don't know if that was special because of its location or what, but at least for me, it was a wonderful experience inside this Best Buy.
So now what half of a Best Buy today has got to be just like iPhone screen covers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Last time I was at a Best Buy, I think I saw like what, maybe one rack of CDs tops. Like it's shrunk enormously, but at least when I worked there in the, I guess this would have been the late 90s, early 2000s. It was an enormous section of the store was the CD and DVD section, which is where I worked.
I can't say I ever did much CD shopping at Best Buy. I think I got my copy of Elton John, Madman Across the Water at a Best Buy. Yeah.
Well, the thing I'll never know, because obviously I only worked at the one Best Buy, there were some extremely deep cut choices there. Like you could get some Moldy Peaches, you could get some Danny Cohen, you could get some Coco Rosie at this Best Buy in Portland, Oregon. And I presume we just happened to have like, I don't know, a supplier that was catering to our audiences, but I don't know. It was a really good Best Buy for some reason.
But so you didn't like hang around with your Best Buy colleagues talking about Bad Brains and Stiff Little Fingers and stuff?
We actually kind of did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice experience. However, it was at a Best Buy, so not really that cool.
You had the blue shirts?
Yes, most definitely.
That is the uniform of the gods.
All right. Well, basically the idea for this episode then is we want to talk a bit about weird music videos. Normally on Weird House Cinema, we talk about weird films and what is a music video to some degree, but a short weird film or a short film anyway. Seth, you and I were talking about this a little bit off mic, I guess yesterday. We were chatting back and forth about how you kind of have this... There's a wavelength. There are the varying degrees between just footage, like live footage of a performance or concert footage, and then you can go all the way into actual short film territory, where what you have created is no longer really a music video. Like I guess a lot of us, or at least for my part, I think of music videos. I think of those video packages that were put out to promote the album. And so you would see it, you'd hear it, and then you would go to, say, Camelot Music, and you would have to plop down, what, $20 on this album, and this would be, for in my case, it would be my album for the month.
I completely agree, but here's my question to you, Robert. What would you say Thriller is? And I'm talking the full-length Thriller with the, you know, all the narrative. Is that a short film or is that a music video?
I say it's still a music video, but it's certainly approaching that gray area, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Did either of you guys ever buy a video single? This was a thing that was briefly a sort of media product that you could pay money for. I once bought a VHS tape that was the video cassette single of Ninja Rap by Vanilla Ice, which was, so it was the video for Ninja Rap from, I guess it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, am I right about that?
Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah. But then also it had interviews with Vanilla Ice on the behind the scenes details for Ninja Rap.
I definitely owned some of these, and I actually really, really enjoyed it. I'm going to say maybe like 5 years after the cassette video single was when they started basically putting out like the collected music videos of such and such artist on a DVD. Do you remember those years?
Yeah, there were some really nice ones. Like we used to have the ones for like Michelle Gondry and I think Spike Jones.
Yes, yes. And those were the director's label series of DVDs. And I had the complete collection. I loved those. So good.
A lot of those Michelle Gondry videos are so good. That like the one for Bjork, Hyper Ballad is... Mm-hmm. That always sticks in my brain. It's
even amazing. If you're not that into the tracks themselves, like, you know, they're just such nice pieces of filmmaking for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that's the ultimate thing. Like when a music video is really good, like it makes you like a song you wouldn't otherwise be into. You know, it could actually successfully shape and mold your musical interests based on the visuals associated with the sound. And I think one of the most, I remember like watching rap videos, and like the weirder rap videos were very interesting in that it felt like they almost gave a wider audience, you know, permission to get into rap in an interesting way. I think of stuff like, you know, like some of the ones like Dean Carr directed, he directed one music video for this track Puppet Masters by was it DJ Muggs, and it had Dr. Dre and
Be Real
in it, you know, and it's like super weird video with like a demonic pope and it's raining money and Be Real is a golden demon. You know, stuff like that would just really suck me in.
Yeah, you can really tell the difference between music videos that are themselves a sort of, a fully realized artistic or at least entertainment product, and those that are just kind of an afterthought. I think a lot of those came later on in the history of music videos, where it's like, we need a video for the single. Mm-hmm. And so it would just be like footage of the band playing the song, cutting back and forth between that and weird things, just like, here's like a head going mat, 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 or something. The 90s were full of these.
Yeah, but you know, some of those were great. That could be well done. But I think when I think of like a proto music video, like one example that instantly comes to mind is Black Sabbath's Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's basically a staged concert performance with like some, you know, kind of psychedelic graphics in the background.
Mm-hmm. Y'all know the music video for Kansas, Dust in the Wind?
Yes, I do.
I would say that's an early example of a category that I'm going to talk about in this episode called Normie Weird, which is a music video that is weirder than it meant to be, because it just has the members of Kansas standing around looking like they're ready to go to prom. They're dressed in like frilly shirt tuxedos, and they're playing this very cheesy song about time passing and mortality. But the way it pans over their expressionless faces is really alienating.
Well, I think with what both of you just said, there is a very real bell curve when it comes to the quality of music videos and whether or not MTV is actively playing music videos. Because the proto music video, they were low budget and just no one really knew what they were doing. No one was really trying to do anything. And then post MTV playing music videos, suddenly it dips down again, and they're made for YouTube now, which is mm-hmm. fine, but the budget is clearly not there anymore. Like almost no one is putting the same monetary, you know, investment into a music video now as they did in like, let's say 2003, you know, like it's a completely different world. And here's an example of, I guess, where the money's going now. If someone wants a really good music video, there's that amazing, I guess I'll call this a short film, for Anima, the Tom York music video directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. It went direct to Netflix. So that's how they still got that money. That's how that's how Paul Thomas Anderson still got his paycheck, was Netflix had to write the check for him instead of it just going to YouTube, you know?
I guess it's kind of like what could once be... you could say it's an expense in promoting the material. Now it's just an expense in part of the artistic expression itself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Rob, do you want to jump right in with the Wild Boys?
Yeah. My first pick here for a favorite weird music video, and probably just my favorite music video in general. It's hard to distinguish between the two classifications. It is the 1984 music video for Wild Boys by Duran Duran, directed by Russell McKay.
Wild Boys! Never close your eyes! Wild Boys always shine!
Russell McKay, some of you might remember, the director of Highlander, Highlander 2, various other films, but also just a ton of music video work. He did Total Eclipse of the Heart, often just, you know, really visually interesting, often high energy or just multiple things going on at once in the music video. And this is a prime example of it.
He directed a 1984 horror movie that I just watched earlier this year called Razorback, which is absolutely disgusting, but is also peak Russell Mulcahy. It really needs to be seen. It's a cross between an Australian Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Jaws, but with a pig instead of a shark.
Huh. Now, how big is that pig?
It's a very large pig. I mean, I would say at least two horses size pig.
Mm. Yeah, it's a monster movie, so you gotta have a monster pig, right?
Right, and so part of it's a vendetta. You know, you got a Quint type character who's on the hunt for this pig that killed his wife, I think, and so the pig must pay. But also, it's set in Australia, and it's full of the Australian, you know, the outback equivalent of the Sawyer family.
Yeah. So I haven't seen that one yet, but I really need to. There are several key films on his filmography that I haven't gotten to yet. But and likewise, I haven't seen anywhere near all of his music videos, some of which I think are lower budget affairs. But this is a big budget music video. And in my opinion, this is music video perfection. Mulcahy takes us on a rich, sort of thunderdome-y, subterranean, post-apocalyptic journey through a world that has cyborg worship, windmill-based torture of lead singer Simon Le Bon, automotive crucifixion, hang gliding. It has mutant monsters living in, like, the sewer water. There's primal dance. It's essentially like a big Cirque du Soleil kind of number as well. But there's this loose narrative structure that isn't completely apparent, and this is what I love about a good music video, where you're not completely sure what the story is, but there's a sense of the story there. You know, you have to sort of, you pull the narrative out, you kind of meet the music video halfway.
Yeah, this is such a great video, and it strikes me as, you said Thunderdome, and I guess that could be true, but I'd say by the timing, the thing that really struck me here would be the Road Warrior as an influence. So the Duran Duran guys are dressed like Mad Max with leather jackets and mm-hmm. asymmetrical gloves. And the Wild Boys, the titular Wild Boys, are dressed like the soldiers of Lord Humongous. They're all sort of that Vernon Wells character, you know, be still, my dog of war. Mm-hmm. And they really prefigure the War Boys from Fury Road. Now, of course, that movie wouldn't come until many, you know, decades later. But they're so similar, I almost wonder if the War Boys in George Miller's movie were inspired by the people dancing in this Wild Boys video, which was probably inspired by George Miller's The Road Warrior.
Yeah, I mean, I love George Miller, but imagine if Russell Mulcahy had gotten to make his own post-apocalyptic film. I mean, he did do some films later on that I think you could classify as post-apocalyptic. But apparently with this, the genesis of this video is that Mulcahy was interested in directing an adaptation of William S. Burroughs' The Wild Boys, A Book of the Dead, which I have not read, but I have read that it's supposed to be like an apocalyptic tale of a homosexual youth rebellion against Western civilization. I'm not sure. Like I say, I haven't read it, so I don't know exactly how all of that pans out, or, you know, given the work of Burroughs, like how much that needs to be then recreated to take on anything like a narrative form. Mm-hmm. But it would seem that much of this music video reflects, you know, some of the aesthetic ideas and maybe some of the plot elements associated with that never realized project.
This actually kind of ties into my impressions of this music video as a child when I first saw it, which was, if I'm sure you'll remember and anyone listening remembers, there were often a lot of movie tie-in music videos where they would show yeah. clips from the movie kind of embedded into the music video. When I saw this as a kid, I was convinced it was some sort of movie tie-in for a film that I had never heard of. And watching the full-length version, because like there's like the MTV version, which is what, maybe 4 minutes or so, and then the full-length version, which Rob shared with us, which is at least twice as long. Wow, so many elements feel like just chunks out of a movie. And it's astonishing how much money they spent on this with no actual narrative or actual, I guess, through line or tie-in. It just seems like money for money's sake in a big pile. And I think it's beautiful for that, you know?
This was a great waste of money. I agree.
So the version that we were looking at that's like longer than just, I guess, what would you call it? I don't know, the video edit. The long version is known as the Long Arena version now on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it has all this stuff in it. It has this Pat Benatar-looking woman in a Waterworld cage being menaced by a robot that looks like one of those Boston Dynamics four-legged robots, but up on stilts. Mm-hmm. And it's got, it's got the leather masochistic windmill water torture device, which is great.
Which I understand almost drowned Simon Le Bon. Like it was.
Oh no!
Yeah, he's in interviews. He's talked about that. Where, or I don't know. It depends. I think he's also kind of downplayed the idea that he almost drowned. But it sounds like it was not pleasant to film.
Right. So they've got him on one of the. What would you call the thing? One of the flags, one of the wings of a windmill mm-hmm. going around. And every time he goes to the bottom of it, his head goes under the water.
Yeah. And he's still got to sing. Yeah. Thing too.
Yeah, but he's getting tortured a lot in the extended version of the music video. You already mentioned that there's automotive crucifixion. That you meant that literally. Like at one point, he's being crucified on the roof of an upturned car.
Yep. Yeah, it has a lot of. I guess ultimately there's some BDSM elements to this this one. There's it's a very erotic video in many respects, but also with just all this beautiful weirdness. It's quite a video to have watched when you were young. I watched it as a kid, and I just remember like not really knowing what all was going on here, but I was in. I loved it. I loved the weirdness, the darkness, the erotic charge of the whole thing, and it's a precursor to Highlander 2, because Joe, I know you probably noticed that we have these feathered, leather-bound, hang-gliding guys in this that really reminded me a lot of the immortal assassins Korda and Reno, who pop up in the future of Highlander 2.
Now, when you call them immortal assassins, I think you may be somewhat kowtowing to the later cuts of Highlander 2, because what you should say is the assassins from the planet Zeist. That is what they are in the original cut.
Right, but once they're on Earth, they're immortal, right? Isn't that how it works?
Oh, well, maybe it is. Okay, yeah. I concede that point. I'm sorry.
Because then he cuts their heads off and he gets the quickening, right?
That's true, yes. So, Seth, you've seen Highlander 2, The Quickening?
Oh, of course, yes.
The original cut, right? Not any of that redone crap?
I have to presume it's the original cut, but I would have to, really investigate to make sure.
The original cut is the one where they're on the planet Zeist, and that is where the immortals originally come from.
That is the version I have seen, yes.
Okay, yes, yeah. That's the only one worth seeing. Okay, so the situation in Highlander 2, The Quickening, is that Connor McLeod, the survivor of the first Highlander movie, the winner of the prize, he's growing old, I guess, in the future. He's become a scientist, and the world is now very Blade Runner-y. They've clouded over the atmosphere with some kind of thing that they had to put up there because the ozone layer was gone, and so Earth is just crap now. It just sucks to be here, and for some reason, Michael Ironside on the planet Zeist decides, well, I'm sick of waiting around for Connor McLeod to get killed on Earth since he was banished there millions of years ago. I'm going to send assassins to get him now. Like, he got tired of waiting for millions of years. And the assassins show up, and they're these flying bird men who have this horrible clown laugh. And one of their heads gets chopped off when Connor McLeod knocks them under a train, and the train wheel rolls over their neck.
It's a great set piece and a great, great action sequence.
but then you get to see Christopher Lambert in old man makeup turn back into young, vigorous, healthy 30-something Lambert, and it's a sight to see. Sorry, I went on Highlander 2 tangent.
No, it is to be expected when we're talking about Russell McKay's work, especially again since this music video, there is some connective tissue between this and Highlander 2, and even with Highlander, because I was reading some of the people behind this film. Not all music videos have that robust of an IMDb profile, but this one lists Nick Malley as one of the makeup artists on it, and Nick worked on a ton of films, including The Man with the Golden Gun, the first two Star Wars films, The Shining, Clash of the Titans, Life Force Krull, and then his final film was Highlander 1.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. I mean, I just will say again, this is a movie. It's not a movie. This music video looks great. It has top shelf movie level costumes and special effects. There's one part where the people get attacked by a worm with teeth that comes out of the sewer water.
Yeah.
And it's like this big kind of bizarre phallic creature that latches onto your face and bites your face off. That would have been at home in any A-list sci-fi horror movie of the 80s.
Yeah, it looks good. It still holds up today. I mean, how many music videos can you think of that have a great monster in them?
Yeah. Fair point. I would say the only part to me that did not hold up that well, mostly just because it was very obvious how it was happening. I'm sure you guys noticed this too. The animated segment where suddenly their tongues are coming out and their tails are growing on the dancers, it no longer quite matched up. And that was fine.
Yeah.
I like it in the context of the music video, but I think their practical effects were a little bit better than their special effects.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to catch that on a reviewing of it, to notice the... the digital effects on this, because I did not really expect there to be any digital effects in this.
They were very cartoony, like literally like hand-drawn cells, cartoony. And it just wasn't necessary. They had so much good practical effect work happening. They didn't need it. They would have been fine without it.
They were in post and they were like, man, I wish I'd put some prehensile tails on these wild boys.
We still have like, some money left. We still in the have time. Budget.
Okay, I wonder if either of you guys have thoughts on the following question. Why are so many music videos of the 1980s set inside industrial spaces? I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, just some random rock song that lyrically, thematically has nothing to do with oil refineries or steel manufacturing, and yet that's where they are for the video. Is there a reason that so many of these videos had the rockers singing amidst pipes and chains and sparks?
I have a theory, which would be in the early days. Again, we're discussing the bell curve of production value for music videos. Early in the bell curve, before people really knew that MTV was worth putting all this money and energy into, someone quote-unquote shot the rodeo, where they went, hey, what do we have? We have access to this strange steel mill, instant production value. We'll have the band hang out in there, throw on a fog machine. Perfect. We're good to go. But here's where I bet it gets really funny. This is all speculation. But I would bet that not that long after that, someone would see that original, you know, steel mill video and go, that's the place. All music videos got to take place in a steel mill. So they then built a fake steel mill and then completely, you know, negated the entire production saving, you know, value of being in a steel mill. So I'm just guessing, but that's my guess.
And then maybe like, you know, it lines up the decline of American factories and the rise of the music video. Yes. Like everything was just in the right place at the right time.
Video killed the steel industry.
a lot of abandoned industrial spaces and factories. It's like, what can we do with them now? Well, you can at least, you know, like rent them out to a film crew.
Yeah, still pretty much the case.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine. or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
All right, Joe, I think you have a selection here for us. And basically, it's a great way to get into this, because we talked in this previous selection about what happens when a few little digital effects are added.
Yeah. Okay. So for this selection, first of all, I feel like I need to preface this by saying I often get the impression I've seen far fewer music videos than a lot of people my age. Like a lot of people my age bring up some video they saw when they were a kid, and I'm like, oh, I never saw that. I guess I was just not a big MTV or VH1 viewer as a child, and most of the music videos I know I saw as an adult, like later, you know, looking them up on YouTube and stuff. I mean, I remember a few things, but so it's not as deep in my brain as it is for many other people. But for my first choice here, I do want to admit, I never saw this when I was younger. I only discovered it as an adult, but what a discovery it was. So there are lots of music videos that are explicitly, intentionally weird. You know, we're going to talk about many more as we go on today. But for my first selection of the two, I would like to start with a category that I would call normie weird. And this is videos for extremely mundane, middle-of-the-road, mainstream music that clearly were not supposed to be exceedingly strange, and yet they are.
This is an interesting category. And yeah, I see where you're going with this, because I think a lot of great or at least weird music videos come out of this.
Yes. And so my prime example here, the year is 1985. The artist is Mick Jagger. The song Hard Woman from the album She's the Boss. She's a hard woman to please. I thought about letting her know. She's a hard woman to leave. I think this was directed by a guy named John Whitney Jr. This video actually has very little easily accessible online information about it, but I'm pretty sure this guy was the director. IMDb contends that he was a producer on the movie The Last Starfighter, which I had a tape of as a kid and greatly enjoyed. Has a lot of good aliens in it. That he got special thanks for working on Tron. I'm not sure what he did, or maybe he was just a friend of Tron. And that he did some visual effects for Westworld, the old one, not the new one. And that he worked on something called the Jupiter Menace, which I had to look up, and it appears to be some kind of doomsday documentary predicting the imminent end of the world on the basis of a passage in the Bible, and what some psychics say, and expert talking heads just like saying things about cataclysm and nuclear war and all that.
Involving Jupiter?
Yeah, so I haven't watched the whole movie. I just skipped around in it a bit, but it looks like a lot of fun. You know, so this in the 70s and 80s, people often forget like a hugely, hugely popular genre of books and docufilms like this were about the coming apocalypse. I mean, I think this was really one of the best-selling books in the world was that the late great Planet Earth book, which was like a evangelical Christian, you know, the world is going to end in the year 1980 something or 1970 something, like hugely, hugely popular genre. And I think this fit into that at least partially.
Yeah, because they were turning on the TV, they were looking at MTV music videos, and they said, surely the second coming is at hand.
Right. They saw Wild Boys, and they were like, oh no, Jupiter is coming to smash the Earth. And I got so this movie hosted by George Kennedy. George Kennedy.
Wow. George Kennedy got to eat. I was looking up this video as well on IMDb and did a little more digging. It seems like John Whitney Jr. and this guy named Gary Demos, they had a company called Digital Productions. And I guess they were like the go-to people at the time if you wanted some sort of a digital effect in your film or music video, or in this case, if you just wanted to build the entire thing out of digital effects.
Yeah, and that's clearly the orientation here. This was a technology-first music video production. Now, as for the song itself, I love Mick Jagger, but this is not good. The song is a crooning, slow jam, rock lament about a breakup with a hard-hearted, gold-digging woman who unsentimentally leaves Mick Jagger alone with his tears and his regrets. And I believe the song and the video are also supposed to be kind of steamy, but this is deeply undercut by everything about it. As I said, you know, I do love the Rolling Stones. I'm not trying to be mean, but this is not Mick Jagger's finest hour.
Yeah, this is not a good song. Like I prefer Teddy Bear from the last Weird House to this.
The Janet Agron, yeah.
Which I've now listened to many times. That's it's something. It's something specific.
Yeah. But this song is just like slow, you know, I gave her laughter. She wanted diamonds. And it's just one of those complaining songs, right?
Yeah.
The problem is he was really good to her, but she didn't love him enough. And then she went on her way, and that was so mean. And
but he's writhing and dancing the whole time, right?
Yes.
So it's like, it's hard to really buy it as complaining, because he's like, I'm unhappy. I'm having a bad time. No, I mean, you look really pleased with yourself.
Yeah, he does. He's like, he's really like got the strutting posture when they show the actual Mick Jagger. Like, so at some points in this music video, he's animated, and other points, it's just him in this brand new pink collared shirt. This, like, they just took it out of the wrapper. The collar is really starchy, and he's like, he's doing that thing where like the neck is really stiff. He's holding his head super high up while he's singing. And so I guess they were encountering the problem. Okay, how do we animate a video for this song? It's just a standard sort of breakup lament. That woman was mean to me. And what they decided to do was set it in a 1985 computer animated polygon village of Adobe architecture, where the titular hard woman appears to be a kind of psychic modular robot made out of neon gas discharge tubes. And she does acts of telekinesis on bowls and kitchenware. And then there is also a neon tube version of Mick Jagger, who for some reason is wearing a basketball jersey and at one point decapitates himself, juggles his own head, and then immediately grows the antlers of a stag out of his head. And I was trying to understand that. I don't think it's supposed to be a Wendigo type thing. I think maybe it's supposed to be that now that she has left him, he is single, meaning he's going stag.
Oh, I thought maybe, because this was probably the best part of the whole thing for me, and I thought maybe it was like a Green Man thing, and then he becomes this primal chaos god of the hunt or something, but I think your interpretation is probably correct.
Yeah, no, that would have been better. Like, the antlers come out, and he's like, I am now Lord of the Forest, and aren't you sad you left me, because I could have given you endless mushrooms and mosses in the dark. but this video, Seth, I'm very interested in your point of view on this, because, of course, you have experience with, you know, film production and animation, but this video seems to me very much like the kind of obscene weirdness that can result from technology-first filmmaking. And I'm open to being told I'm wrong here, but it seems like the kind of thing where a lot of the animation in it is not because it fit their artistic vision for what the video should be, but because here are some animations we know how to do, or that we've already put together, and we can just sort of slot them in here, which could explain things like the hard woman doing telekinesis on bowls.
Yes. No, I fully agree with you. And I think it also explains some of his wardrobe choices. So, for example, a tank top is much easier to animate because you don't need to show the cloth of the shoulder of an arm actually interacting with the cloth of like the body of like the jacket or whatever.
Oh my God.
It's much easier, much easier. And in fact, I think that explains why he's also kind of a wireframe as opposed to a full blown 3D figure, because like, especially when digital animation, when an arm, leg, head, neck, whatever is moving, one of the hardest parts is disguising the clipping of the arm you know, physical 3D form going inside of the actual shoulder blade or you know, whatever. You don't want it to look like it's a bunch of polygons interacting and splicing into one another. You want to hide it. So if they just have this, you know, neon stick man with a basketball jersey, they don't have to hide any of that. It can be just that is what's happening. And almost like in, do you guys remember that video game Rayman? Do you guys remember that guy?
Yeah.
Remember,
he
has no arms and no legs, but he has hands and feet. And that's for the same purpose. It's so you can just animate those hands, gesticulating everything that's happening, very, very full of life, full of energy. But you don't have to worry about that arm accidentally clipping into the body and ruining the illusion of life, you know? Huh.
Neat. Oh, I'm so glad we have you here for this insight, Seth.
And then in addition to that, I would presume that this Adobe Village was already on some animator's hard drive, that they had built it either as like a test of the capabilities of their software, or perhaps they had another production in mind. I can say from my own personal experience, there was a forest scene that I was animating for a music video. And to draw something from scratch, obviously, takes a lot of time. A forest, this was a pine forest. So lots of little, you know, craggly edges, of course, to every single tree, et cetera, et cetera. By the time I finished with it, around the same time, I also needed an album cover that I was working on. And there was a tattoo that I was designing. And I thought, hey, this is all three now. And then one thing I drew became elements of all three of those projects because I had it on hand, it fit, and I had already done the work. And I think a lot of animators do that. And I would bet that that's what happened in this video too.
So the video for Hard Woman is sort of like a cleaning out of the drafts folder in the animation process.
I would think so. Yeah.
I don't know how clear we were about this already, but this is absolutely computer animation. And that's very pivotal because this is 1985. Computer animation was not very advanced at this point. This video is roughly contemporary with the also computer animated video for Dire Straits, Money for Nothing, which also looks terrible. And on a strict technical level, I would say that the animation for Hard Woman is actually better, but I think the result somehow is an even stranger video experience.
Yeah, Money for Nothing, I think you can easily make a case for it being a better song, even if you know, some of the lyrics are gross. But it's one of those videos that if you grew up watching MTV and VH1, Money for Nothing was always like put out there next to Video Killed the Radio Star as being an example of like look at the treasures in our vault. Like look at this fabulous video. So you kind of like I don't even think of that being bad animation in Money for Nothing. Not that I've watched it in a very long time, but I was like kind of programmed by the channels to believe in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Robert, will you be sharing links to these videos on semutamusic.com?
Yes, I will make sure I have them all embedded in a post there at semutamusic.com.
I would highly recommend people check out this video. In fact, both these videos we've talked about so far, I had only seen the shortened version of the Duran Duran video. Seeing the full-length version really is special. It's a treat. It's an epic. And then this video, too, I felt like I understood what this video was, but until Joe shared it, it's wild. Yeah.
Can I read a brief? So I was trying to find something about the production of this video, and I found a short write-up in PC Mag by K. Thor Jensen that talks a little bit about the processing power that went into making this gem. Jensen writes, quote, CBS Records was eager to get the first ever solo album from Rolling Stones frontman Mick Jagger, and part of the deal was a sizable budget for music videos to promote She's the Boss. Again, that was the album. The clip for the single Hard Woman was, in 1985, one of the most expensive music videos ever produced, in part because of its advanced technology. Animators John Whitney Jr. and Gary Demos, along with ex-Disney animator Bill Croyer, used a Cray XMP supercomputer. At the time, there were only 6 units in operation, with five being permanently in the employ of the U.S. government and the defense industry. They used this computer to create a Southwestern Adobe house for a pair of pastel-lined CGI figures to dance through, with Jagger's visage composited into a flying diamond. Is it in the diamond? I thought it was in the vase, like that his face shows up on a vase and then it expands.
Yeah, it's telekinetic- awful looking. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks unbelievably bad. And I do want to make clear, I'm not just here to rag on really bad music videos today. My next piece is going to be on a music video that I really love. But I guess that's it for me and for Hard Woman, unless you guys have anything else to add.
My only question is, Joe, do you think all this could have been fixed if they released an arena edition of, of Hard Woman?
It had some more automotive crucifixion in it.
Yeah, if we just had like five more minutes of this, it would all make sense.
Yeah. But I think especially now with Seth's insights, I feel like I really understand this one. This video is just a calamity that must be witnessed.
Now, the thing is, with your selection, Joe, I can understand why I never saw it because of the problems inherent in it. But I'm really surprised that I have never seen Seth's selection. I'm not even like on like Beavis and Butthead. It seems like that would have been prime territory because they watched a lot of weird music videos. But Seth, go ahead and tell everybody about this one because this sucker's weird.
I was so, so happy that when we first started talking about this, that you two had told me you had never seen this before, because I think everyone who loves this video feels like a sort of like a personal kind of like debt that must be paid by sharing it with everyone else in the world, because it does feel so incredibly special to me. So the video itself is called Possibly in Michigan, but the song is called Animal Cannibal by Karen Skladany.
How do I meet the strangest men? They always seem to find me. Remember that time way back when I kissed...
And the year was 1983. So the director of this video was actually the person who kind of like put it all together. Her name was Cecilia Condit. And more or less, she is an artist. She makes video art, visual art, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, she used to be director of graduate studies in the Department of Film, Video, Animation, and New Genres at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and also a professor at the school. So I mean, she knows exactly what she's doing. And in mm-hmm. fact, if you go into her filmography, she's made many videos along the same lines of this video. But I guess I should kind of explain what it is before we get too much deeper. Here's a description of the video from Electronic Arts Intermix, which is a host of a lot of her video works on the internet. Okay. Possibly in Michigan is an operatic fairy tale of cannibalism, desire, and dread in Middle America, a densely collaged narrative in which beauty meets the beast in the surreal landscape of shopping mall suburbia. Two women with a penchant for violence and perfume take revenge on their animal-masked male persecutor. In this contemporary rendering of gothic enchantment, victim becomes aggressor, and the familiar becomes the fantastic. Condit reworks popular narrative conventions using black humor, sing-song dialogue, and ironically gruesome images, constructing a comically grim fairy tale of dreamlike pursuit and sexual violence. She inverts traditional Freudian metaphors to impart a subversive voice to her transgressive heroines. Quote, "I bite at the hand that feeds me," end quote. Possibly in Michigan is a classic tale of psychosexual horror retold as an irreverent fantasy of the other.
I think you could look at this as a short subversive slasher film set to music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And but the music is so odd in such an appealing way.
It's so good.
Because this was 1983, it's got a very synth-heavy soundtrack to this. Mm-hmm. The artist that we mentioned before, Karen Skladany, she is the writer of the song. She also is one of the stars inside this music video. There are two women, Jill Sands and Karen Skladany, and then they are being followed by an odd man in a very strange mask played by Bill Bloom. And here's how I was introduced to this video, which I think helps explain it. Someone sent this to me and said, "Hey, do you like Tim and Eric?" And I said, yes. And they said, then you should like this. And they sent it to me. And that was all I knew to begin with. And it has that feel. It has the feel of a Tim and Eric sketch, except for the fact that it's real. You know, that this is an actual thing that was put out into the world, made for enjoyment. And let's see, Joe, you and I were talking about basically the difference between something made intentionally bad versus something that is just kind of bad.
Sure.
I feel like because she has executed this version of creepy and strange in so many of her other videos, which I highly suggest that people should go check them out, I think she knows exactly what she's doing. I think she is perhaps leaning into the creepier aspects of her limited budget and limited perhaps technological tools at her availability. And so she's leaning into those things. So like when they're telling the story of a poodle being microwaved and then they cut to like a woman tearing apart a chicken, it's like, I see what you're doing. And it works. You're making me feel creeped out this entire time. And I'd like to hear your guys' opinions. What did you think seeing this for the first time?
I thought this video was a home run. I thought it was fantastic. I see exactly what you're saying with the Tim and Eric type sensibility, that a humor based on awkwardness and very limited commitment to the reality of the premise, but executed with an infectiously enjoyable style. I would call this a home run.
I see what you're saying with the Tim and Eric comparison, and I do enjoy some of the humor of Tim and Eric. But it's like with Tim and Eric, like they're going to throw the cabbages into the audience, you know, and this film keeps the cabbages on stage, if that makes sense. So this feels a little more to me like self-contained as a piece that you can find humor in, but also has an inherent seriousness to it, you know. So I really liked it, and it does have a lot of disturbing imagery in it in a way that I think a lot of people would not expect from a music video, because having done most of my music videos in the 90s, I think of stuff like Dean Carr when I think of disturbing moments in music videos, which is very has a different energy. It's a little more throwing cabbages into the audience versus this. But this is great. I'm kind of surprised this. Did this ever air on MTV?
I can't imagine it did. Here's a brief history of this kind of making it into the world. So I'm sure in 1983, it probably like played the art house scene, played the gallery scene, you know, like it stayed to the art world. But in 1985, suddenly this was put on the 700 Club. You guys more or less know what that is, right? It's like,
it's Pat Robertson, right?
Yes, Christian-centric talk show, you know, giving out news and advice and all that stuff.
Complaining about culture.
Yes.
Oh, okay. They didn't do like a music video section where they're like, just music videos today. Here's this one.
No, I think a standard part of that type of media is complaining about other media, saying like, can you imagine look at how depraved this music video or TV show is.
Oh, I see.
So the first time that this short film, this music video made it on television was on the 700 Club, as they were doing exactly what Joe just said. They were particularly upset by the fact that this used funds from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Ohio Arts Council, because she was living in Cleveland at the time, and the director, Cecilia Condit. And so they played it, and they like freeze framed on that part in the credits, like, look at this government spending, you know? <Yeah. laughs> And this was during that moral panic Reagan era, you know, where anything that was provocative with art, in particular government-funded art, was just unheard of and needed to be tisked and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's where it first got attention, was as we need to ban this, you know?
I find it hard to imagine that the Pat Robertson crowd also would really sort of like would really get this video.
Right. Yes. Because I mean, and like you said too, it is very similar to just a standard horror film, like in structure, you know, and not too dissimilar from the standard like DIY kind of bootleg cassette kind of thing that you would get and just be fascinated with in a pure cinematic sense too.
Yeah.
The story continues. So that was when it first kind of broke into the world, was in 1985 on the 700 Club. And then, you know, it went away, as all things do. And then on Reddit, in around the early 2010s, suddenly it started being passed around again. And it was kind of, I'm not sure I entirely understand when the young culture, Gen Z, refers to things as cursed. You guys have heard this and seen this around before?
Yeah, I've seen it on Reddit before.
I can't say I entirely understand the meaning behind when someone says that something is cursed. Perhaps they mean that it sticks with you, or that like it now has become a part of you, whether you want it to or not, and it's inside of you. But anyway,
that's what I always think. I always imagine like a different Ring video,
right,
that would have this in it instead of like strange wells and people with towels pointing at things. It would be clips from stuff like this.
I could be wrong, but my impression of the meaning of cursed is that it is a stimulus which provokes a strong negative response, but one that is difficult to explain the reasoning behind. So you can't just say like, you know, oh, strong negative response because it's violent, or because, you know, the standard things. It's a kind of difficult to define revulsion.
I like all these definitions, but that's how it first started making its rounds on Reddit, was as a quote-unquote cursed video that the folks would pass around and show to each other, and it got a lot of popularity on there. And then, very recently, I'm talking about 2019, part of this video, specifically part of the audio soundtrack for it, became extremely popular on TikTok. And do you know the part where, okay, so the video begins, you see the stalker man following the two women as the song is playing, you know? And then at a certain point, whenever they have a lot of just kind of like in-between dialogue in this music video, they often sing it in a very strange way.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite parts, yeah.
Absolutely. So one of the first instances of that, they're standing at a perfume counter, and they're like, it's like, here it is, that's my favorite perfume! Like all of those parts. Mm-hmm. That audio has been clipped out and reused as these like reoccurring trends and challenges on TikTok. So currently, as of now, at least, the hashtag possibly in Michigan has over 12 million views on TikTok.
Oh, wow.
And I've watched some of these. They're fascinating. So like, for example, a big reoccurring theme I saw was discussing shoplifting. So while they're saying like, it's like, I'll wait for you by the door now. It's my favorite perfume. And so like the children will like lip sync these words as they're like kind of miming stealing something from Sephora. Like that's something very strange. And then if you have like an unconventional favorite scent, like let's say you're, oh, I don't know, at like a car wash, and like that hot wax smell is coming while you're washing your car, and then they'll mime it going, that's my favorite perfume. And like that becomes a reoccurring theme, like in that standard TikTok and social media of videos, it has become like mutated again and again and again to have all these different meanings and different uses, all from this very strange video. And I saw an interview with the director, Cecilia Condit, and she's ecstatic about this. She loves it. She's like, this is great. Nice. Like, I'm very happy that the kids are having a good time. I love this video too. Good on them.
Well, it makes me want to check out her other work.
You'll enjoy it. Anyone who looks up any Cecilia Condit, it all has this same vibe. And in fact, she has been and was doing. She may be retired now. I read something that said she was retired, so I don't know. But she's been making videos for, I'm going to say, 30 years at least. Mm-hmm. The most modern ones, the ones made in like the 2000s, still feel like this video, which is astonishing. Like all brand new technology, brand new subject matter, but has this same vibe to it. So I couldn't recommend it higher.
I demand that we devote at least 30% of the federal budget to Cecilia Condit videos. Take that, 700 Club.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
All right, is it time for our second round?
All right. The second video I chose. So basically, I'd be kidding myself if I didn't include a Tool video in one of my picks because I'm a longtime Tool fan, and the visual artistry associated with the band has always been essential to the entire enterprise, certainly in promoting the early material and helping it find an audience. And then it's continued to be part of just sort of the artistic expression of the band, particularly as far as Adam Jones is concerned. He's the guitar player of Tool, has always been a member of Tool, and he's really the driving force behind music videos, visuals, anything visual associated with the band. And so I had to choose one of them, so I went with Parabola from 2005. It's a Tool song directed by Adam Jones of the band. Though it's interesting in that, as is typical with most Tool videos, the band is not seen in the video at all. Not only is the band not in this video, but someone from another band is in the video instead. Tricky, the UK trip hop artist.
That's interesting. Yeah. Usually, aren't their videos just mostly populated by kind of non-human, like stop motion critters?
Yeah, especially like the first two were directed by a guy named Fred Sturr, and they have a very distinctive, dark stop motion animation style. It's familiar if anyone's familiar with like the Brothers K and so forth. It's very much in that style.
I was always thinking it'd be funny if they were trying to sell that Tool wine and they had a commercial for the vineyard, but it was in that animation style. So it had like little bandage creatures harvesting the grapes and all that.
Well, you have to remember Maynard is the wine guy, and uh-huh. He has very little to do with the actual visual presentation of the band.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've been Tool schooled.
Yeah. But Adam Jones, very interesting guy because he's a great musician, but also a visual artist and a former special effects guy who worked with Stan Winston on a number of films. So all told, his credits include The Return of the Living Dead, Nightmares on Elm Street 4 and 5, Pet Sematary, Ghostbuster 2, Predator 2, Terminator 2, Batman Returns, Edward Scissorhands, Jurassic Park, and he did makeup on two films. I know I've seen one of these and you've seen the other. 1989's Dr. Caligari, virtually nothing to do with the original Dr. Caligari. This is a kind of a weird erotic art film. And then 1990's Demon Wind.
Ooh, Demon Wind. That is not a good movie, but it does have some good demon fight scenes in it, if I recall.
Oh, good.
It has some martial arts where people are kicking the devil.
Nice. So this music video, it has a number of wonderful weird elements in it. It starts off with some like electron microscope weirdness, like something's going on at a micro level. And then you have this strange altar tended by a group of weird humanoids in suits who first slice open a gray apple with a sacred knife to reveal occult secrets within it. And then they ignite flames from their fingertips, levitate, and regurgitate a black circle on the table. And this is probably my favorite sequence in pretty much any music video because it's just so weird and divorced from anything of the natural world.
Yeah, they're just like vomiting this black slime out of their mouths that makes geometric shapes. I guess it's a circle at first, but then we get more geometry. I was thinking in this video, it reminded me of like something like art that would be created by the cult of the Pythagoreans, you know, the kind of weird sacred geometry.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that in Tool's work, the sacred geometry stuff. I guess they're kind of summoning these weird spheres that are a part of the plot in this, because basically you end up with Tricky playing an alien humanoid with eyeball antennas, who's menaced by these gray floating balls, and he has a little homunculus friend in a pulsating iron mask, and this is stop motion animated, and it looks awesome, but it's trying to help him, but then it gets eaten by the balls or killed by the balls, and then Tricky has to bisect the little homunculus, and then eventually Tricky grabs a leaf in a sacred forest, and he like elevates to a higher human form and has this psychedelic awakening that defeats the gray spheres forever. And that's pretty much the sort of plot of the film, but it does have kind of like a narrative art flow to it.
I really enjoyed the part where it explores what if my eyelids had tentacles.
Yeah, like it's essential.
So I think you guys both know that I'm a real sucker for stop motion animation. I love the Ray Harryhausen monsters and all that. And I'm pretty sure that most of Adam Jones' video work is heavy on stop motion effects, unless I'm wrong.
Maybe the very recent videos have relied less on that and more on digital effects, but but certainly like all the stuff in the 90s and then and into the current millennium a little bit as well have had some sort of stop motion element. Yeah, because it makes sense because his roots are in the practical effects world, you know. Oh, and I should also point out that the ending sequence in this utilizes the artwork of Alex Gray. So it's wonderful. I think I have this one on DVD. All right, Joe, what do you have for us?
Okay, so I wanted to stick to the 1980s because that just feels right for some reason. But I wanted to go in the opposite direction from Hard Woman. That was a very much a failure. Love you, Mick Jagger, but that horrible and normie weird. Now I want to go like straight hard weird with a classic, well-known but still supremely bizarre music video for an excellent hit song that is clearly straining with all of its might to be as weird as it possibly can and succeeding to the max. And so the artist, Herbie Hancock, the year 1983, the classic video for the song Rocket. I see the directing credit usually seems to go to Kevin Godley, but I think maybe it was Kevin Godley together with Lal Cream, who had both been members of – they'd been part of a rock duo together, and they had both been members of 10cc. But if you've never watched the video for Rocket, I think a lot of people who grew up in the 80s are familiar with it. They saw it at some point. But if you've never seen it, you should check this one out. This is just tops for me. It's a great song to begin with. It's an instrumental track by Herbie Hancock, but the video is a house. I think it's one of these British houses that were common in the 80s, full of mutilated, throbbing department store mannequins having like seizures and these kind of suicidal dance moves where they're slamming their body parts against things in various stages of dress. They've all got some kind of weird underwear on. And Herbie Hancock only appearing on a TV screen within the video, like Professor Brian Oblivion from Videodrome.
It also reminds me of the failed cyborgs in RoboCop 2.
Yes.
You see, like, tearing their own heads off and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Suicide robots all throughout, just, like, slamming into things. And I don't know. This video is absolute madness, but it's so good. It's a great song. It's a great video, at least in my point of view. Of course, I hear your guys' thoughts. But apparently it was inspired when Kevin Godley and Lal Cream saw an art gallery exhibit of pneumatic robots by an artist named Jim Whiting. And they were like, huh, I wonder if we can put these in a video. And so you end up with like legs without a body, just doing these chorus line kicks. And you get, head slamming into things, like this sort of mannequin body in a bed doing like the Exorcist flops, and then legs walking through a room without a body. I know I'm forgetting things. This bizarre bird creature sort of pecking through a window.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And
the lady with the weird goggle eyes.
Oh my god, it's so good. And it just like doesn't stop. Like every moment of this video is to the max weird, and I feel like has not been superseded. I mean, people have tried to make really weird videos in the decades since, and this one still is like king of the mountain for me.
Another thing that I find very fascinating about this video is that, to my memory and to my knowledge, this is a very popular video.
Yeah.
Like, when people discuss like the best music videos of all time, favorite music videos, this one comes up often, and I'm with you, Joe. I think it's absolutely beautiful and really strange and fascinating, and like there's always something new to discover. Like just by like staring at a different corner of the screen on your next viewing, you're going to see like, oh, are those some like, you know, odd robot lungs up there? What's happening? And I'm always very pleased when something very, very strange sneaks into mainstream popular culture and just gets beloved. I think it's rare but wonderful.
I think it won all kinds of like MTV awards, MTV Video Awards. I don't know what those things are, but you know, like popular, it was considered popular entertainment, not like stuff for weirdos.
but on paper, it's an instrumental track. Herbie Hancock is an electronic, you know, I'll call him a jazz musician, but I'm sure he's much more complex in his own description of himself.
Transcends genres.
Yeah. And but like on paper, that doesn't make any sense, that there's a supremely weird pneumatic robot music video of this instrumental electronic jazz song. And it's beloved, and it's the greatest, and it's everywhere, and it wins awards. That's fantastic. It's so rare.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I was actually watching an interview with Herbie Hancock where he talks about this video, and he pointed out something that I didn't notice the first time, but he's absolutely right. He says, you know, beyond just all the weirdness and the throbbing robots, there are these interesting video effects choices that actually synchronize with the audio and heighten the impact of the song. Mm. Like Hancock himself points out that at the parts of the song where there are record scratches in the track, the video actually does a synchronized tape rewind effect with the record scratches that sort of like, I don't know, redoubles the effect of the music.
Yeah, I think I noticed this too. I think it's very noticeable in a spot where you said there's the legs without a body walking through a room and the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. And like the legs kind of start moving forward and start moving backward because the tape. Oh, kind of like in the Star Wars Holiday Special when the repair robot is kind of glitching, but much better.
Ooh, Harvey Korman. Oh, no.
I think one of the really interesting things about this music video is that, like, I mean, I'm not super versed in Herbie Hancock, but I don't think of Herbie Hancock as a weird artist. So this music video, you know, very accomplished artist and one whose work, again, transcends genres, but like this music video at once feels appropriate, but also far weirder than it needs to be. in a way that reminds me a little bit of the music videos of Peter Gabriel, where, you know, Peter Gabriel, I mean, is definitely a weirder guy and has definitely has roots in more performance artist type stuff. But a lot of times I feel like his music videos were far weirder than the sonic material that they grew out of.
Right. Let Land of Confusion being chief among them. That, you guys remember that one with all the puppets?
Is that a Genesis one? That might have been Phil Collins era, but it definitely is a great example of a music video that's far weirder than it needed to be for the song.
You're right. You're right. That was Phil Collins era Genesis. You're absolutely right.
Before we move on, I know we were going to mention a few runners up. Do you guys mind if I just mention a couple real quick?
Please.
Go for it.
Okay. So one category that I'd like to go for is what I would call minimalist weird. And that is, can a music video be supremely weird without being crammed with all kinds of stuff going on, all kinds of like wild animations and robots going berserk and all that? Can a music video be extremely weird with not much more than a straightforward performance? And I think the answer is yes. I mean, one example of this I was thinking about is that there's some PJ Harvey video from the 90s that's just her singing into the camera, but it has like profoundly bizarre imagery. I think it's the video for Man Size. But then there's another one that I was just watching the other day, which is Grace Jones' music video for I've Seen That Face Before, Libertango, which is a fantastic song to begin with. You know, great creepy song with sort of like a French musical influences. And the video is not cluttered with all kinds of stuff going on. It's actually mostly just a very straightforward performance into the camera. It does have some cool sort of costume props. I'm not sure what you'd call them. At the beginning of the video, Grace Jones has these huge brightly colored pyramids attached to her face, forming like facial features. So like one is like a beard, and one is a nose, and one is a hat. And yet this music video manages to have this fantastic, transcendently weird energy just through the music and Jones' performance.
Grace Jones is one of the greatest. I mean, she is definitely a still living David Bowie, you know?
Yeah. She's electric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, to make reference to Record Store Society, the episode that published last week, the week before this episode, Grace Jones was in my co-host Tara's top five concerts she had ever seen, and the description of that concert sounds absolutely amazing. And Grace Jones, wow.
Yeah, I bet seeing her live would be awesome. Because, yeah, she has transfixing, like, wizard power in her eyes in this video. Just, like, otherworldly. Very, very cool. And so that's worth checking out. But the other one I would tie in, so that's minimalist weird. The last one I would say is movie tie-in weird. Weird by the presence of elements from a movie that the song is tying in with. There, I gotta go with Prince, Bat Dance. I know this is not among Prince's greatest musical output. Of course, I love Prince, but this song, you know, the Batman soundtrack, I think, is pretty widely considered maybe the nadir of the Prince arc. But nevertheless, this video is just bananas, and the video really elevates the song.
This is where he's half Batman, half Joker.
Yes.
Am I remembering that right?
He's like Joker, but simultaneously Joker and Two-Face, because he's divided down the middle.
Yeah.
Even though Two-Face is not in the Batman movie that was being promoted here. And he's also sort of Batman. Like, he's doing his music, but he appears to be doing it at like the console in the Batcave. So he's also sort of Bruce Wayne in the Batcave. And then there are dancers dressed up as bats and dancers dressed up as Kim Basinger from the movie. And it is very, very odd and weirdly erotic in a way that Batman is not. I mean, I guess even the worst Prince song is better than most other music, but it takes some of Prince's lesser musical work and really takes it to a level that's highly entertaining.
He had some great music videos, for sure.
Yeah.
I feel the need to interject, though, in that Two-Face was, in a very small way, in that movie, because we had Billy Dee Williams playing Harvey
Dent. That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was actually really looking forward to that version of Two-Face, and we eventually got it in the Lego Batman movie, but it was just a brief...
Oh, that's right. We did.
It was a very brief element, but still, I was glad that Billy Dee Williams finally got to play Two-Face.
Finally some payoff on that. Yep. Yeah. Well, I already mentioned my runners up, I think, because one of them was that Puppet Masters video, DJ Muggs, directed by Dean Carr. Another one I had was a Peter Gabriel video, Shock the Monkey. And the other one was Rockwell's Somebody's Watching Me, directed by Francis D'Elia. But we have one more full-fledged selection to go here, and that's your second selection, Seth.
This one feels to me like it's the most obvious selection. If someone were to say to me, hey, what's a strange music video? Like, to me, this is like when it comes to quality, execution, timelessness, the quality of the song, too. I have to go with Come to Daddy by Aphex Twin. This was a Chris Cunningham video. Chris Cunningham was another one of those directors that had a DVD in the director's label, DVD box sets. And it's so good. If you've never seen it, here's a quick version of the story. So there's an elderly woman, and she's walking her dog in a rundown industrial setting, because, of course, it's a music video, as we've discussed. Must be industrial. Her dog urinates on a television, and then suddenly you see Richard D. James, aka Aphex Twin, in the television screen. The screen then kind of changes and mutates, and then a very pale, very tall, very thin being crawls out of the screen. He summons a gang of children, all with Richard D. James's face, and they all just kind of wreak havoc. Running around, hitting things with sticks, yelling in the old lady's face. Just very, very strange things just happen back to back to back. And yet it doesn't feel random and it doesn't feel cheap. It feels very well planned, very well executed. Like, the production values on this are extremely high. And you don't really see the gaps anywhere, even this many years later. I believe this was a 1997 music video. And I think it's just like little rubber masks on the children and little people wearing the Richard D. James face, you know, the very iconic Aphex Twin face.
Yeah, you even if you haven't listened to Aphex Twin and don't know who Richard D. James is, you may very well have seen his face as a meme on the internet. If you've seen like a guy with red hair doing a super creepy huge grin.
Yes, I think I actually knew that face before I ever knew what Aphex Twin sounded like, because that face is on the cover of at least two or three of the album covers for Aphex Twin. And actually, I found an explanation from James about that, and I thought it was actually really interesting. Here's a quote from him. Quote, "I did it because the thing in techno you weren't supposed to do was to be recognized and stuff. The sort of unwritten rule was that you can't put your face on the sleeve. It has to be like a circuit board or something. Therefore, I put my face on the sleeve. That's why I originally did it. But then I got carried away."
That basically sums up a lot in Richard D. James's career.
Right.
You know, and it's fitting that this big face of his, I think it predates the troll face that you see on the internet now. Because a lot of his stuff was kind of a troll move. Like, even this track, I'm to Understand, he kind of did it as a troll move. He's just kind of like, what if I made a popular song? What if I made something that was kind of, you know, in a different genre? And then he made it. And then, a lot of his work is like that, where he is producing just phenomenal, especially his ambient work. Selected ambient work albums are especially incredible. But then he'll have tracks like these that are, getting into different genres, and the video here is also capturing that same energy of essentially messing with people.
Yeah, I mean, this video is pretty effective as a short horror film, and it is just it's clearly intentionally alienating an intentionally creepy song, an intentionally creepy video full of monsters and a million copies of Richard James's face. And it made me think about how it's kind of like Being John Malkovich world, except it's Richard D. James.
Yeah. it's very well directed. This and other videos that Chris Cunningham did for Aphex Twin, they really make me wish we could have seen the film adaptation of William Gibson's Neuromancer that Cunningham was apparently attached to for a number of years and never came to fruition.
I'm sure it would have been great. And also, speaking of Richard D. James slipping his face into weird places, have you guys ever seen the spectrogram art that Aphex Twin did?
Mm-hmm.
It's so wonderful.
So.
Basically, what he did, a spectrogram, if people don't know, it's sort of a visualization of audio. It's like looking at the waves in like usually most audio editing software. If there's any place in an Aphex Twin album where it sounds particularly strange, if you pop that into a spectrogram reader, just any kind of audio software that shows you those things, it's probably Richard D. James's face that he inserted into the audio. And
okay,
they're beautiful. If you Google spectrogram Aphex Twin, you will see his face in his music. Like literally, his face is in his music. And what a great trick, you know?
This reminds me of, I guess, what would come much later is like the comedian mashup musician Neil Cicerega putting Shrek and stuff in his spectrograms.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I should look into that.
Yeah.
And then I guess a couple that I really wanted to sneak in here, but man, obviously we can talk about this all day. Speaking of which, if you guys do want to hear us continue talking about this, I have good news for you. This is part one of a crossover episode. Right on the same day that this episode is publishing, Robert and Joe are going to be guests on my podcast, Record Store Society, and we're going to be discussing the top five music videos of all time. So they're going to be joining me over there. So if you've enjoyed hearing us talk about music videos, you're going down memory lane and want to hear more, please go find Record Store Society on your podcatcher of choice, and we're going to continue this conversation. It's going to be a lot of fun with my co-host, Tara. But anyway, so I really wanted to mention, and I'll just say them quickly because we're running out of time, Ballad of Buckethead by Buckethead, wonderful music video. Rabbit in Your Headlights by Uncle, love that one.
Oh, that's terrific. Very good.
Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden was a lot of fun.
And R.C. Bates, right?
Yes. And Where's Your Head At by Basement Jacks. That's when we were talking about just music videos with monkeys in general before this. And I suppose I'll throw one more in there. Weapon of Choice by Fatboy Slim. That's the one where the one where you have Christopher Walken doing the best soft shoe anyone could ever do and just being utterly surprised by how good of a dancer that Christopher Walken is.
All right. Well, this has been fun. Seth, promote Record Store one more time. To tell us where they can find your podcast.
Absolutely. It's a weekly show every Friday. Just go and go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, any of those places. Type in Record Store Society or visit recordstoresociety.com. Like I said, it's basically just a music talk show. Myself and my co-host Tara, quote unquote, work at a record store. And then our customers, aka our guests, come in and we talk music for a long, long time. If you're real nerdy about music and you just like music conversation, we're making this show exactly and specifically for you. And like I said, Robert and Joe are going to be our guests on today's episode. The day you're hearing this podcast, this conversation is going to continue right over there on Record Store Society. So come listen to me and Tara talk to Robert and Joe some more. And in fact, this Sunday, we will be re-airing that episode, the Record Store Society episode, in this feed. So if you're feeling lazy and you don't want to go hunt down a new podcast, that's fine. Check out the Stuff to Blow Your Mind feed this Sunday, and that second part of this episode will be airing. So you don't have to move around too much if you don't want to. Oh, but anyway, I'm running late for my record store job. Wink! So I'm going to run out the door now, add a little sound effect, walk, 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 door slam, psh, and I'm gone. Goodbye.
Wow, I can't wait to put on our Richard D. James masks and rob Seth's record store.
All right. I'm looking forward to appearing on the podcast. This was a fun chat. Again, I'll put all these I'll put embedded versions of these on the blog for anyone to check out or certainly look them up yourself. They're all like officially hosted on YouTube. And if you want to check out other episodes of Weird House Cinema, you can find this every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind feed. Wherever you get this podcast, wherever you find the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, we just ask that you rate, review, and subscribe.
Huge thanks to Seth for not just producing this episode, but for appearing on it. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent.
Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.